Animal Snacks, it's time to start the show. Animal Facts and Animal Snacks with your hosts, Elise and Nicole.
Hey guys!
Welcome to Animal Facts and Animal Snacks.
That's Elise.
And that's Nicole.
And today we're going to talk about orcas.
Yay! So Nicole, what did we make today?
We made, by far, our cutest snack ever.
Oh my gosh, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Some background information.
Oh gosh.
Nicole sent me a picture of this snack, and I looked at it and sort of rolled my eyes in my head and thought, yeah, there's no way we're ever going to be able to make those. And when we fail, we're just going to eat Oreo cookies because they are black and white like killer whales. But we did it. So
they look so good. So we made cake pops, but we shaped them like whales. And then we dipped them in black chocolate. And then we used fondant to do their white patches. And they actually look pretty spot on.
I would say amazing. Better than the Pinterest picture.
Not to toot our own horns.
We're tooting our own horns. These are amazing. We also themed it so they were swimming in the ocean when we took our snack picture.
It's pretty darn cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got pretty into the snack today.
We did. They're delicious too.
Okay, Elise. So why don't you give us some background, give us some scientific info on orca whales / killer whales.
Okay. So killer whales are animals that have been feared, revered, and idolized. They were carved into rocks in northern Norway 9,000 years ago. They were described by Pliny the Elder in Rome in the 1st century AD. They've been hunted globally, they've been vilified by the US Navy, and they've been depicted by indigenous cultures all over the world. But what are killer whales? So killer whales are toothed whales that are the largest members of the dolphin family. Surprisingly. So the dolphin family's Latin name is Delphinidae, and whales, dolphins, and porpoises, in fact, all belong to the infraorder Cetacea, meaning huge sea creature. So if you remember the taxonomy that we've talked about in previous episodes, the levels of classification of different animals, the kingdom for killer whales is Animalia, just like every other species we've talked about. The phylum is Chordata, so animals with spinal cords. The class is Mammalia, so these are mammals, not reptiles like our crocodile episode. Their order is Artiodactyla, and the infraorder is Cetacea. So Cetacea means huge sea creature. There are currently 89 living or extant species of Cetacea, and they are divided into two groups. The Mysticeti, which are baleen whales, which are whales that have baleen instead of teeth and two blowholes, and there are 15 species of these. And Odontoceti, which are toothed whales, which have teeth and one blowhole, and there are over 70 species. Molecular evidence actually shows that cetaceans' closest relatives are even-toed ungulates, or hoofed mammals, like hippos, camels, pigs, and okapi. And spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about okapi in a future episode. So cetaceans, like whales, dolphins, and porpoises, have hind limbs that are internal and vestigial. So you won't see any hind limbs or hooves on these mammals like you will on some of their closest relatives. But back to killer whales. Killer whales are the largest member of the dolphin family, and dolphins are members of the Odontoceti, or toothed whale, group. So an easy way to remember this is that all dolphins are whales, but not all whales are dolphins. So killer whale's scientific name is Orcinus orca. So essentially, calling them orcas, which is often what people call them, is like calling humans sapiens, because our scientific name is Homo sapien.
Yeah.
So it's not wrong, it's just not very commonly done for other species. We often hear them as orcas, but their killer whale common name was historically different. Sailors often saw these apex predators preying on other species of whales and called them assassin whales or whale killers. And over time, this name morphed into killer whale. They're not called killer whales because they attack humans. Humans are actually not a prey source for killer whales, and a killer whale has never killed a human in the wild. So in present day, orca is euphemistically used to avoid the negative connotations of killer whale so that people are less afraid of these predators. In addition to being the first sea creature that we've talked about on our podcast, killer whales are also the first marine mammal that we've talked about. And a marine mammal is very similar to a land-based mammal. So mammals are warm-blooded, they have hair or fur, they breathe air through lungs, they bear live young, and they nurse their young with milk produced by mammary glands. So marine mammals have all the same characteristics as other mammals, but they have adapted to live part or all of their lives in the ocean. So adaptations that help them live in the ocean include a thick layer of blubber or fat, streamlined bodies for agile swimming, extra storage of oxygen in their muscles and blood so that they don't have to surface as often to breathe, more blood than proportionally sized land mammals, the ability to direct blood flow only to their vital organs, and the ability to slow their heartbeats so they use less oxygen when diving. Besides killer whales, porpoises, and dolphins, other marine mammals include pinnipeds, which is seals, sea lions, fur seals, and walruses, sea otters, sirenians, which are dugongs and manatees, and polar bears. So all animals that people have heard of or had posters of growing up or little stuffed animals of. Killer whales are actually very common all across the world. So not only did I have a killer whale stuffed animal growing up, but I bet kids all over the world probably did. They can be found from the polar regions to the equator, but they often frequent cold coastal waters. And since they are found in so many regions, in mobile populations around the world, they're always swimming, so the populations are always on the move, it is difficult to further classify this species. So there could just be one species of killer whale, but they also may have 3 to 5 races, subspecies, or possibly 3 to 5 different species of killer whales, depending on how different these global populations are. And we need a lot more research and data to determine how to further break up killer whales into different taxonomic divisions. But now that we know a little bit about what makes up a killer whale, Nicole, I know you have a lot of great information about what characterizes a killer whale and how they've adapted to their environments.
Yeah, definitely. So orcas are known for their long dorsal fin, which is the fin that's on their back, and the black and white coloring. Just behind their dorsal fin is a patch of gray called a saddle because it looks like a riding saddle. And orcas are black and white for a reason. Their coloring helps camouflage them by obscuring their outline in the water. So animals looking down on them, such as a seal on an ice, might not see them because the whale is dark from the top, so it just looks like dark water. On the other hand, an animal looking from underneath will see his white belly, so that kind of just looks like the sun from above. And orcas, like Elise said, have a cylinder shape that tapers on both ends to allow them to be extremely aerodynamic, and they can swim up to 34 miles per hour.
Wow.
And also, as you said, they are the most widely distributed mammals other than humans, right? So these animals don't stay in one area. They've been documented travel long distance. For example, one study found a group of orcas traveling all the way from the waters off Alaska near the central coast of California. This is about 2,000 kilometers or 1,200 miles.
Wow.
Yeah, so they documented one pack of orcas going all the way from Alaska to, like, mid-California,
which is
crazy.
That's a long swim.
It's a really long swim.
Good thing they swim 34 miles an hour.
Yeah, and unlike most animals in this podcast that we've talked about, they are social animals, and they live in groups called pods, and usually these pods have about 40 members. And there are two different kinds of pods, a resident pod, which is less aggressive, and they tend to prefer fish, and a transient pod, which kind of acts like a wolf pack and is much more aggressive.
Fun fact, all pods are matrilineal, which means that the pods are matriarchal. So a female orca is in charge, and it's all of her related female relatives that are in the pod with her. So males leave the family group.
Wow.
Not females. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So matriarchal society.
Aren't lions the same way?
Yes.
Really cool. In addition to using these pods for hunting, they also use them to build a sense of community. Orcas are very protective of their young, and other adolescent females will often assist the mother in caring for them. So it's kind of like families raising families, or you know how they say, like, it takes a neighborhood, or whatever that expression
is.
That's
so sweet. It takes a village.
It takes a village. That's what it is. It takes a neighborhood does not roll off the tongue very well, but you know what I'm saying.
And that's really important because infant mortality in the wild can be as high as 37 or 50%, depending on where the calves are born.
That's so sad.
So it's helpful to have all of those neighborhood.
Yeah. All the neighbors.
All the neighbors protecting you.
Mothers give birth every 3 to 10 years after about a 17-month pregnancy. A baby orca is called a calf, and they're about 8.5 feet long and can be anywhere from 260 to 350 pounds at birth.
That is a huge baby.
Yeah, so I can't imagine that, like you said, their mortality rate's high. Like, it's a huge animal. Like, right. What's hunting them? That's still gigantic. Calves will nurse for about 5 to 10 seconds at a time, but several times in an hour. And this will go on day and night until the calf has matured enough. It weans off at about a year old, and orcas will live anywhere from 50 to 80 years.
Wow. The females actually don't reach sexual maturity until around 10 years old, and they reach their peak fertility around 20 years old.
Oh my gosh.
So similar to humans.
Yeah.
Then the females can breed until about the age of 40, and then they have a decrease in fertility or a menopause. So after they stop being able to breed, they can still live for decades after their breeding ceases. Males on the
very much like humans. They have almost like the exact same cycle as we do.
Yeah.
Wow.
And similar to human males, male killer whales are sexually mature at the age of 15, but they typically don't breed until their early to mid-20s. And then, like we discussed, to avoid inbreeding, males mate with females from other pods. So the males leave their family group. They're not staying with the same pod to breed.
That's a lot of girls. If it's about 50 or about 40 in a pod,
mm-hmm.
mostly females.
Mostly females, yeah.
Whoa. Okay. And so orcas have very large brains, and it's actually the second largest among ocean mammals, the largest being the sperm whale.
Wow.
Yeah. This jumbo brain endows them with an intelligence unparalleled in any animal of its size, which makes them really trainable. Hence why they're used in a lot of aquarium shows. We will get into that later, Elise. Don't get frustrated. We'll talk about it later.
She saw me sit up really straight.
Yeah. Back to that later. They also have the ability to rest one side of their brain at a time, which is how they sleep. This allows the side that's awake to regulate breathing and prevents drowning while the other side takes a nap.
Wouldn't that be great if you could just rest half of your brain and never actually have to sleep? You could just be productive 24
Extreme
hours a
day. Multitasking, pretty
Extreme
much.
Multitasking.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
And then orcas, or killer whales, like you said, they are the largest dolphin. They can grow up to 6 tons and be anywhere from 23 feet to 32 feet.
Wow. And then, how big is that?
Wait, to put that into perspective, a Volkswagen bus is about 13 and a half feet long. So an orca whale can be the length of more than 2 Volkswagen buses.
That's insane.
That's like the length of my whole apartment.
Maybe bigger.
It's insane.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
They're gigantic.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And 6 tons. That's like 12,000 pounds.
It's a lot.
That's a lot.
How many hamburgers is that a lot?
How many? Oh, let's calculate. That would be 48,000 quarter pounders. That's a lot of hamburgers.
That's an insane amount. Okay. So being that they are so ginormous, it's no surprise that they are one of the world's most powerful predators. As you know, orcas are often called killer whales. Though they don't typically attack humans, the name is still well chosen due to the animal's ability to take down large marine animals. In fact, orcas will prey on almost any animal they find in the sea, in the air, over the water, or along the coastline.
Wow.
They have approximately 45 teeth, each about 4 inches long, and will eat about 500 pounds of food a day.
Wow.
That's a lot of food. That's a lot of hamburgers.
That's a lot of hamburgers.
They feast on marine animals such as seals, sea lions, even whales. They are known to grab seals right off the ice. They'll also eat fish, squid, and seabirds. And they have also been reported to eat moose, according to SeaWorld. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Okay. Those are very unalert.
The coast
moose.
Is not safe.
No.
Don't
Maybe
drink, by,
don't
the,
drink
yeah.
by the ocean.
Nope. Instead of chewing their food, they take one big gulp. And believe it or not, these brilliant beasts can swallow small seals and sea lions whole.
Wow.
Yeah. Bigger prey is ripped into chunks before being eaten.
Okay, so Pinocchio getting swallowed by the whale is an actual possibility.
So Pinocchio's so little, they're swallowing sea lions, at least.
Okay.
He'll swallow Pinocchio's whole family in one gulp. Jeez.
And he's not a human, so it's within the realm of possibility.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, what a boy.
Yeah. Orcas hunt in deadly pods, like we said, about 40 individuals, and they use very effective cooperative hunting techniques. So here are just some of the ones that I found.
I am so excited for this.
These are wild. This was my favorite part of my research, was reading how they hunt. It's crazy. Okay. So number one, the carousel. Despite what you may think, it isn't easy for orcas to catch fish. Most fish are very fast, and they swim in defensive, wall-like schools. They can't just lunge at them and gulp large quantities of fish and seawater the way, like, a baleen whale will.
Okay.
Instead, like sheepdogs, they work a flock. So they herd the schools into a tight group that they can control. They then force them to the surface and keep circling them so that the fish keep getting in a tighter and tighter circle. Pod members then take turns diving beneath the school and looping around it, forming, like, a carousel.
Wow.
Yeah, while blowing bubbles, calling and flashing their white bellies to frighten the herring. In response, the fish will swim tightly together, and then they will begin desperately jumping out of the water to try to get away from the whales. So it's pretty much like popcorn popping.
Wow.
Right? They're just like, pop, jumping out of the water, trying to get away.
That must be cool to watch.
Yeah. Once the pod has the fish under control, one of the orcas will slam the edge of its tail on the school and will just kill. It just hit, knocks them out.
So they stun the fish by slapping their tail.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they either kill them that way or they stun them, which just makes them really easy to catch. Yeah.
Wow.
Then there's the karate chop. So using its
broad... So first is carousel. Now that's karate carousel. Chop.
Now this is karate chop.
Okay.
So using its broad tail, the killer whale pushes the shark to the surface of a watery vortex.
A shark this time.
This is a shark. This is how it will kill sharks.
Okay.
It then turns slightly and raises its tail high into the air, crashing it down on the shark's head.
Okay.
The next part is quite amazing. As though it has some kind of knowledge of the shark's biology, the orca will flip the shark over, sending it into a stupor that scientists call tonic immobility. Now paralyzed, the shark makes for an easy and safe meal. So basically, bumps him on the head, flips him upside down, and now the shark is pretty much just immobile and it just feasts on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're so smart.
This one is my favorite. Okay.
Okay.
The blowhole block. Okay. Orcas don't limit themselves to eating animals that are smaller than themselves. They've been observed attacking much longer or much larger creatures, such as the gray humpback whale and even blue whales. Orcas are sometimes called the wolves of the sea. They tend to single out young or weak individuals when hunting large prey. The attack follows a similar pattern. The orca takes turns ramming, biting, and pulling on the whale's pectoral fins and generally wearing it down. They then launch from the water onto the whale's back, trying to prevent its blowhole from breaching the surface of the water. After a chase that could go on for hours, the exhausted giant will drown. The orcas go to work stripping the whale from all of its notorious bits and pieces, its tongue, its blubber, leaving the rest of the carcass for scavengers. So it literally smothers a whale. It suffocates it. It's like putting it in a chokehold, pretty much.
Wow.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
Then, this is probably how they got the moose or other land creatures. They purposely beach themselves.
Okay, so this is a new strategy.
This is a new strategy. Okay. This is called the beach attack.
Okay.
This is when whales intentionally beach themselves to catch seals on land, meaning they jump from the water onto land. Orcas will hurl themselves onshore to seize unsuspecting sea lion pups, timing their hunts to coincide with the waves and tides so that they aren't beached along. So they pretty much like ride the wave in, grab up a sea lion, and then ride it back out.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Everyone you tell me is like more and more fascinating.
I know.
Okay.
And then this is the last one. So this is called the wave. So this is when a group of whales will charge an ice floe in a tight formation, creating a huge wave front. Just before reaching the ice, they dive underneath, giving a last-second push to the wave with their tails. This results in a wall of water crashing over the ice and sweeping any seals right off of it.
Okay, so prey does not stand a chance.
No! They're 6 tons. They're gigantic, and they're so smart.
They're so smart, and they work cooperatively.
It really is like a wolf pack. It's terrifying.
I think they're more intelligent and amazing than a wolf pack. I can't even get words out. I'm just stuttering. Like, this is so cool.
Yeah, and they have other ways that they communicate, too. So, in addition to all this, like, hunting, right? Like, how are they figuring this out, right? Well,
yeah, how are they telling each other what to do?
Right?
And, like, Fred, you go left. Irma, you go right.
Irma.
I don't know why these whales have, like, 1980s names, but...
1980s? You know. Like, I love Lucy names. They're 1940s.
Okay,
well,
anyway.
Well, they're old, right?
They are old
they're
whales.
They're old whales.
Okay, they've perfected this over time.
Whales make a wide variety of communicative sounds, and each pod has distinctive noises that its members will recognize even at a distance. They use echolocation to communicate and hunt. making sounds that travel underwater until they encounter objects, then bouncing back, revealing their location, size, and shape.
Bats also use that communication technique.
Wait, don't you have a clip for us that actually shows us how orcas communicate?
Yeah, so this clip is from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. They have a bioacoustics program where they record different animals' sounds, and they actually spend a long time studying killer whales. So they have this really cool clip of a pod communicating with each other using echolocation.
It sounds like that episode of Friends when Ross plays the keyboard.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So that's just one pod talking to the other pod members. And the amazing thing is they're intelligent enough to know what all of those squeaks and grunts and moans and squeals and whistles mean. And in fact, each pod makes unique sounds that other pod members can recognize at a distance. So each pod has their own unique dialect, and these dialects are complex, stable over time, and are passed on through the generations. So orcas essentially have language, and this language is a manifestation of animal culture. So we used to think that one of the things that set humans apart from other animals was tool use, and then we learned that chimpanzees actually use tools, so that's not what sets humans apart. And then we thought that language sets humans apart and culture sets humans apart. Not true. Killer whales have language and culture.
We're not special at all.
We're not special at all. And not only is this communication strategy important so the pod can communicate with young and with members, but this communication strategy and these dialects are so important, as you said, because these pods need to make instantaneous decisions when they're hunting and communicate to other members. So it's really important that they have such a great adaptation to make them apex predators.
Yeah, exactly. And different types of orca will hunt different things as well. So this might also be something that they're communicating about,
oh,
right?
Wow.
Yeah, and you can tell what the orcas are eating based on their teeth and the wear on their teeth. So the variance in tooth deterioration helps us tell the difference between orca types. And orcas are divided into three ecotypes based on their diet. Resident orcas live in cohesive family groups and eat mostly fish and squid. Their teeth have the least amount of wear. Transient orcas, they roam in smaller pods and they eat mostly marine mammals. Their teeth show larger chips and cracks from biting into bone.
That makes sense.
And then offshore orcas, they travel far out to sea and favor sharks whose rough skin will eventually file down their teeth, and sometimes almost to the gum line, according to National Geographic.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, some studies say that orcas in human care may suffer from even worse tooth decay, mostly from them chewing on their steel or concrete tank structures. This wears their teeth to the point of exposing the pulp, and once a tooth gets worn to that point where the pulp is exposed, it'll open up a channel for disease and infection. Luckily, in human care, dentists can perform a pulpectomy or drill a hole in their teeth and extract the soft, pulpy tissue inside. So this hole is never closed or capped, but rather left open for the rest of their life. This will require a daily flushing with chemicals to keep the teeth empty of food and bacteria in an attempt to manage resulting infection. So whale dentists actually have a lot of work cut out for them, right? They're really working really hard to make sure that these whales' teeth are cleaned and that they're not catching any diseases from it or any kind of infection.
Absolutely. And that actually brings up a very interesting point that I'm really passionate about, and I feel like a lot of people are. Essentially, whether or not human care is helping or hurting a lot of species like killer whales. So zoos and aquariums are good for so many reasons. Normally, they increase animals' lifespans, they decrease disease, like these dentists making sure that there isn't any bacteria in the whale's mouths and teeth. They are increasing reproduction, and often zoo and aquarium keepers are great about providing their species with enrichment, toys and novel scents and food items and puzzles and things to do and training so that the whales aren't chewing on their enclosures or exhibiting stereotypic behaviors or basically the same repetitive behavior over and over. So an example of a stereotype is pacing. So zoo visitors often see that pacing is bad, right? It means the animal's bored or the animal can't exhibit their natural behaviors, so they're doing this other behavior instead. So often, especially in present day, zoos and aquariums are so good about making sure that their animals have the best quality of lives possible. But yeah, like you said, just like in the wild, whales in human care might have teeth problems. It's not unheard of. Zoos.
No, it doesn't seem like it matters whether they're in the wild or in captivity. Right. It's surprising. Their teeth must be pretty soft, I guess.
So at least in aquariums, they have dentists that can help care for them. They have veterinarians who can help take care of them. And this brings me to another point that I'm very passionate about.
Here it goes.
Here we go. Okay. So buckle up, kids. This is going to be rough. Everyone knows that killer whales are the flagship species for SeaWorld. So SeaWorld is one of the most famous aquariums in the world. They are well known for having killer whales. In fact, SeaWorld put killer whales on the map. Most people in the world wouldn't know what a killer whale was if not for Shamu. And SeaWorld is actually a research organization. Scientists come from all over the world to study the biology, reproduction, and behavior of killer whales. Research which is often not possible in the wild because these whales live in such remote locations. For example, at SeaWorld, one study measured the metabolic rates of killer whales and used that data to estimate the energy intakes and expenditures of wild whales. From SeaWorld whales, we've also learned about communication and echolocation, immune system function, and genetics, all thanks to the whales and the training programs at SeaWorld. If the keepers and aquarists didn't work with their whales every single day to participate in these studies, we wouldn't have a lot of this really incredible information. Not only that, but SeaWorld shows enhanced public awareness and appreciation. They allowed members of the public to connect with these whales and educated people to care about them. However, lately, SeaWorld seems to have been too good at their job. They have educated so many people to care about these whales that now these impassioned people think they know better than the organization that educated them. So, have you heard of blackfish?
I have. Are you going to talk about it?
I am going to talk about it.
Of course.
Because
you are.
I feel like most people have heard of blackfish and have opinions of blackfish, even if they have never seen it. So, for those of you who don't know,
oh boy,
blackfish is the 2013 quote unquote documentary about Dawn Branchow and her fatal incident with killer whale Tilikum at SeaWorld in 2010. And this quote-unquote documentary got many people riled up against SeaWorld. However, blackfish is propaganda, not a documentary. There are so many reasons that blackfish is wrong, based on research, based on lawsuit evidence. SeaWorld actually sued blackfish for libel. And based on discussions that I've had with past and current SeaWorld employees, including killer whale trainers. So the first reason that blackfish is wrong is that it employs false and emotionally manipulative sequences concerning the collection and separation of killer whales. So for example, SeaWorld does not, contrary to what the film says, collect whales from the wild and has not done so in over 35 years.
Wow.
SeaWorld also does not separate mothers and calves and rarely moves whales between their different parks or between SeaWorld and other aquariums. The second thing that's wrong with this film is that it relies on former SeaWorld employees, most of whom have little experience with killer whales, and others who haven't worked at SeaWorld in nearly 20 years. One of the people in the film that's purporting to be a SeaWorld trainer worked with killer whales for 6 months before she was fired.
Wow.
And she is one of the quote-unquote experts in the film.
Yeah, probably a disgruntled employee.
Disgruntled employee, absolutely. Number three, the film relies on animal rights activists masquerading as scientists. So the film was sponsored by PETA. And just like any group in the world, there are noble causes for that group. There are people who are using that group to do great things. They're also extremists, just like there are in most political groups in the world. So for this particular film, the extremists were the ones who funded it. So producers and cast members are PETA members who have active lawsuits against SeaWorld. These producers and cast members have previously tried to overturn SeaWorld's work with killer whales as slavery under the 13th Amendment. So they definitely have an anti-captivity bias. And these PETA extremists have the motto, better dead than fed.
Oh my God.
These are the same people who do not want you to have dogs, who do not want you to have cats, no pets, no animals in human care whatsoever.
Oh my God, I love having my dogs.
Right.
I don't know what I would do without Luke and Levi.
So the producers of this film are those same people.
Oh goodness.
Number four, the film spins an entirely fictitious account of Don Branchow's death in order to advance its anti-captivity narrative. So this film actually misleadingly cobbles together separate pieces of footage from years apart with a 911 call overlaid on top of it to make you think you are seeing actual footage of the incident. Some of that footage is over 40 years old, and it's spliced with more modern footage. Some of the footage that they use during Dawn's quote-unquote incident isn't even of Dawn. It's of other people.
Wow.
And other whales. Number five, to advance both its anti-captivity narrative and its false theories surrounding Miss Branchow's death, the film falsely suggests that Tillicum the whale had become psychotic and aggressive, and there are many keeper reports to show that this is not the case. Number six, the film falsely suggests that important facts about Tillicum were concealed from his trainers and that SeaWorld is indifferent to trainer safety. When, in fact, from the day that Tillicum arrived at SeaWorld, no one was allowed to swim in the water with him, and Don Branchow never did. And during the OSHA trial after this incident, SeaWorld provided 35 hours of testimony, including their protocols, their training programs, everything, all of which was ignored by the filmmakers. Besides the fact that Blackfish put out all of this false information, so setting that completely aside,
SeaWorld, if you can.
If you can, yeah. Bear with me for a minute. SeaWorld's protocols and training systems are constantly growing and improving, as are any zoos or any other companies. So no matter what the facts of Dawn's fatal incident actually are, SeaWorld did change and improve their protocols to make sure that their trainers are even safer than they were before this incident. So being a SeaWorld trainer is arguably safer now than it was 50 years ago, just as being an astronaut or a race car driver or any other risky profession is safer now than it was 50 years ago. So we know way more now than we did in the past. So no matter what organization you work for, things improve over time. So SeaWorld definitely has improved since some of this footage was taken, just as any company has improved, and they strive so hard to make sure their employees are safe every single day. But in spite of being blatantly untrue and falsified, Blackfish hurt SeaWorld. Profits dropped 84% after the movie's release, which not only hurt SeaWorld's attendance, it also hurt conservation and research initiatives.
Mm.
And then in 2016... California signed the Orca Protection and Safety Act into law, which sounds great.
Yeah, right? that sounds like a really good thing.
It's actually a very short-sighted law. So this law prohibits shows where killer whales perform tricks for crowds. So essentially SeaWorld's historic shows.
Yeah.
This limits education and future generations' ability to appreciate these creatures if they're not allowed to be in these sorts of demonstrations and training sessions in front of people. SeaWorld's having to completely revamp their educational programs. But more importantly, this law bans the breeding of killer whales in human care. So this law effectively terminates SeaWorld's ability to support research and conservation for killer whales. That means that the only killer whales in the state of California are the 10 currently at SeaWorld San Diego.
And there will never be more, then.
There will never be more.
Because they're not allowed to capture them and they're not allowed to breed them.
Correct. So after these 10 killer whales at SeaWorld San Diego pass away, hopefully a very long time from
now. Maybe 100 years.
Maybe. So hopefully years and years and years into our future. After that, you will only be able to see a killer whale in the wild.
Well, what about the other SeaWorld locations or other aquarium locations outside of...
So most other aquariums besides SeaWorld, do not have the resources that it takes to care for such an apex predator. They require a lot of food, like you said. That's expensive. They require huge, huge enclosures. That's expensive. A lot of vet care. That's expensive. So SeaWorld is one of the only aquariums with the resources to tackle the care of these amazing animals. And currently, other states that SeaWorld currently exists in are trying to pass these same laws. So Florida currently has this same law on the table. And this law was sponsored by PETA, who were the producers of Blackfish. So after the whales at SeaWorld San Diego and SeaWorld Florida and all the other SeaWorld locations pass away, you will only be able to see a killer whale in the wild, which is getting harder and harder. As you mentioned, Nicole, killer whales can currently be found from the polar regions to the equator, and they often frequent cold coastal waters. So they can be seen around Iceland, Norway, the Argentinian coastline, the Crozet Islands, New Zealand, the coastline from California to Alaska, Canada, the Sea of Japan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Lots and lots of places around the world. They can survive in most water temperatures, so even places that killer whales aren't normally found tend to have them as visitors. And these whales even occasionally swim into freshwater rivers. Because of this, that means they share a habitat with essentially every other oceanic creature. So they are keystone and umbrella species, like some of the other animals we talked about on our podcast. Additionally, they are indicator species, which means their population health indicates the health of their ecosystem. So if killer whale numbers are declining, the rest of the ocean is probably in big trouble too.
Oh, God.
Okay, it's going to get rough. You ready?
It's going to get rough.
Here we go.
More rough?
Rougher, yep.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so in 1972, all marine mammals were protected in the United States by the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is great.
Sounds wonderful.
That is wonderful. However, the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, defines the killer whale's status in the wild as data deficient. Because, like we talked about, there could be multiple species of killer whale. Plus, it's hard to assess numbers when they move across oceans on a global scale. But the IUCN does list a whole bunch of threats for killer whales. They have threats from conflict with fisheries and accidental entrapment in nets for commercial fishing companies. They have problems due to prey depletion. We're overfishing a lot of species that the killer whales depend on for food. They have threats from habitat loss because we are quickly encroaching into different oceanic habitats. They are threatened by marine pollution, including agricultural runoff and plastic bioaccumulation. So if their prey species eat plastic and they eat their prey species, that plastic is accumulating in the killer whales on really magnified scales. They're also threatened by noise pollution, including Navy sonar. So as we discussed, they communicate with echolocation. So noise pollution affects their communication and their echolocation, which means it affects their hunting. And it can even result in decompression sickness and deafness for killer whales. They're also affected by anthroponeses, which are airborne pathogens passed from humans to animals, including antibiotic-resistant bacteria and pneumonia. And, of course, killer whales are affected by climate change. So a quick case study that delineates some of these threats is the Pacific Northwest killer whale populations. These populations have hit a 30-year low. This population typically resides around the Puget Sound and San Juan Islands, and the southern resident population is comprised of three pods. And the numbers of the southern resident population typically hover below 100. And this population or race or subspecies, however you want to classify it, is considered endangered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. No calves have been born to this population over the last 3 years as of July. And the population is currently at 75 individual whales.
Oh my God.
Normally 4 to 5 calves are born to this population every year.
Wow.
So the reasons for this are multifold. First of all, the population is essentially starving. Their main food source is Chinook salmon, whose populations are declining due to overfishing. Killer whales typically eat 30 Chinook salmon per day each. So each whale is eating 30 fish per day. But there's this trophic cascade happening now. We talked about trophic cascades with wolves, so there's a similar trophic cascade happening right now with killer whales. So since the Chinook salmon are disappearing, killer whales are turning to other prey populations. So they're starting to eat sea otters. Sea otters are a keystone species. They eat sea urchins, which eat kelp. So they're vital in controlling their ecosystem health. As sea otter populations decrease due to unusual killer whale predation, sea urchin numbers increase, which means kelp forest health decreases. If the kelp forest health decreases, that means decreased algae, sea stars, fish, and sharks that depend on the kelp forests. Decreased kelp forests and algae also means decreased carbon sequestration, which means increased climate change, in a nutshell. So again, killer whale population health indicates oceanic ecosystem health, since they are an indicator species. So that's just one of the problems affecting the killer whales in the Pacific Northwest. So they are starving, so they're eating sea otters instead of Chinook salmon, which is their primary prey species. The other problem affecting them is pesticide and plastic accumulation in the fish, in the Chinook salmon and in the sea otters, which is then stored in killer whales' blubber. So when food is scarce, killer whales metabolize their blubber and the toxins enter their bloodstream. The toxins from these pesticides and plastics suppress whales' immune systems and negatively affect females' ability to reproduce. If a female is able to reproduce successfully and actually has a calf, 85% of the contaminants in the blubber are transferred to calves during lactation and nursing, which is horrible. So they're starting off life in a really rough way. An additional threat to this population of killer whales is the 600-mile expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. This 600-mile expansion will increase oil tankers in the area by a factor of 7. It runs right through orca habitat, and it will also increase noise pollution, boat traffic, and oil spills. Plus, as if this isn't enough, the Pacific Ocean water temperatures have increased by 6 degrees Fahrenheit since 2013. 6 degrees for a whole ocean. And this is due to a gigantic mass of nutrient-poor, extremely warm water moving up the coast from Mexico to Alaska. This water is so detrimental to oceanic health, it's actually been nicknamed the Blob.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a terrible nickname.
It's a terrible nickname. So to sum up, these killer whales in the Puget Sound and San Juan Islands are being decimated because their food is disappearing, which means there's a negative trophic cascade happening, which is affecting the entire ecosystem.
Which is our fault because we're overfishing.
Which is our fault because we're overfishing. They are suffering due to pesticide and plastic accumulation in their blubber, which is hurting their reproduction.
Which is our fault because we're littering.
Because we're littering, yep. They are threatened due to the expansion of a pipeline.
Which is obviously our fault, because we're the ones building it.
And they're threatened due to rising ocean temperatures.
Which is probably our fault.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Most definitely. Okay, so luckily Washington State is trying to find ways to support the whales and increase research. Their governor is really interested in passing laws and increasing funding to try and save these whales, which is very noble. A lot of work still has to be done to save them, but at least we're on the right track. Not only is Washington State helping, but there are ways that we can all help killer whales from home.
Please tell us.
So a lot of the things affecting this killer whale population, we don't have that much control over. For example, like, we can't really stop the 600-mile expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. That's really hard for us to do from our living rooms. But we can really make a difference with plastic bioaccumulation. So by eliminating single-use plastic, we can actually incredibly reduce the amount of plastic in our oceans that is then accumulating in killer whale blubber. So there are a lot of ways that you can do this. You could say no to plastic straws and either use reusable straws or no straws when you're drinking a beverage. You could bring a reusable shopping bag with you when you go grocery shopping instead of getting plastic bags at the store. You could get rid of your plastic water bottles and use reusable water bottles instead. Pack your lunch in glass containers instead of plastic baggies. Avoid buying snacks or foods with excessive packaging. Stop using plastic cutlery. Instead of getting that plastic knife or fork from the cafeteria, bring your own washable silverware or even little camp silverware, bamboo silverware with you. Choose cardboard over plastic when you can. So cardboard milk containers, cardboard to-go cartons in restaurants, things like that. This one was really interesting to me, and I'd never heard it before. Swap out your plastic toothbrush. 1 billion plastic toothbrushes are thrown out every single year, creating 50 million pounds of waste annually. And if you switch to bamboo toothbrushes, you can help prevent all of that waste.
I didn't even know that was an option.
That is an option, yep. Another option, avoid cosmetic products that contain microbeads. Microbeads are actually a form of plastic that end up in our oceans, so don't use those exfoliants and things with microbeads. Choose metal over plastic razors so that those plastic handles aren't discarded. And get the hang of using wire hangers. Don't use plastic hangers to hang up your clothes. And while you're at it, get rid of plastic laundry hampers too and switch to more eco-friendly hampers like bamboo.
You love bamboo.
I do.
And yeah, then we will be on the next podcast talking about how all these bamboo materials are taking all the food from the pandas, and now we have to switch to using stone laundry hampers and toothbrushes.
Bamboo's fine. You can use bamboo. Okay, bamboo's fine. I won't take away bamboo. Okay. Just plastic. But yeah, just by doing these couple of minor life modifications.
Pretty
at home,
easy, honestly.
Very easy modifications that actually, frankly, might save you money. You could actually help save killer whales thousands of miles away all across our world's oceans.
I feel like you are like a doctor and you just gave us a needle and then handed us a lollipop like it was going to help. But like you still gave us a needle and we're still really upset.
Right.
And
now
this
you're
like
aware.
Cherry lollipop that you gave us is not helping
But now
at
you're
all.
Aware. And awareness is the first step to solving an issue. Everyone should go out and support killer whales.
Yeah, of course. I think that they're my new favorite animal after reading all about them, honestly.
They're really amazing.
And do you have anything if people want to read further, other than our sources, which we will cite, mostly National Geographic, Life Science, PBS, a whole bunch of other ones, but do you have any books or articles or anything else that people should read up on?
Absolutely. I know that we talked about a lot of different things in this episode, so yeah, I have a number of different sources depending on which aspect of this episode you guys are interested in. So if you want to learn more about the lies and manipulations behind blackfish, you can go to seaworldcares.com and search for Truth About Blackfish. If you'd like to learn about why releasing killer whales in human care to the wild isn't always the answer, you can read the book Killing Keiko, The True Story of Free Willy's Return to the Wild by Mark Simmons. If you would like to learn more about oceanic ecosystem health, you can read Ocean, The World's Last Wilderness Revealed, which is produced by the American Museum of Natural History. If you'd like to learn more about killer whale biology, reproduction, natural history, morphology, you can read Dolphins and Whales by M. Wirtz and N. Repetto. And if you'd like to learn more about bioaccumulation of plastic in our ocean's ecosystem and food chains, you can read Plastic Ahoy by Patricia Newman.
Yay, Mom!
Yay, Mom! So we hope you guys enjoyed our killer whale episode. We know that was really dense and information-packed. Yeah, yeah. Maybe we'll do an animal soon that's doing really well.
Let's find one.
We'll find one. I don't know. We'll look. Just like we looked for a healthy snack, we'll look for an uplifting animal. These guys are uplifting.
Oh,
my God. They just have a lot of problems facing them.
Our snack was adorable.
Our snack was uplifting and adorable, yes.
It was not healthy in any way. It was a cake pop.
No, this was diabetes on a stick.
Delicious.
It was ridiculous.
Covered in chocolate, yeah.
Yeah, we enjoyed eating them.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.